Refined, Matt said. I'm going to have a place for that soon, and you are straight up the best brewer for the spot. And, like I said, you remind me of me.
Minus the tattoos, the piercings, and the attitude. Okay, add back in the attitude.
10 years ago, Matt had been happy to brawl for the sake of brawling, just as Travis was. Matt gave the idea a final push.
Tell you what, think about it for the rest of the weekend, and if you're interested, give me a call on Monday. I can have my lawyer draw up the paperwork for you to take a look at. For now, let's catch the end of the game.
Travis settled in, and both men drained the last of their Rail Rider ambers. Matt had done all he could. If Travis Holby was the man Matt estimated him to be, he'd take this deal, even if it chafed his pride, and he'd also pay back the money, as agreed.
No need to wait until Monday, Travis eventually said. Let's do it.
Okay,
Matt replied. Though he'd kept up a mellow front for Travis, Matt was feeling damn good. Someone had once bailed him out, and now he got to pass along the favor and make a few bucks in the bargain. Chapter 3 At 10 on Monday morning, Kate lobbed an open case of uncooked chicken wings into the dumpster behind Depot Brewing. Misfortune had sunk its teeth into Matt Culhane, or at least into his walk-in cooler.
I'm telling you, everything was okay when I left last night, Kate said over her shoulder to Jerry.
Jerry's face was locked tight with anxiety, a muscle twitching at the side of his jaw.
Can you prove it? Someone screwed up and hit that cooler's power switch. I'm betting it was you.
She turned back to grab something else to toss from the cart full of spoiled food. Jerry wasn't looking much better than the tray of tepid slider patties. Having had her life work pass before her eyes on a couple of occasions, she knew the expression of someone staring down unemployment. And because it must suck to be him at this moment, she decided not to take it personally, that without cause or investigation, he'd pin the blame on her. He'd also called her in 5 hours early. Niceties such as hairstyle and matching socks had fallen by the wayside as she'd scrambled to get to the brewery.
Jerry, I know I had the least experience of anyone last night, but honestly, my lack of experience makes me even more careful. I've told you what I saw. What happened after that? I don't know.
Before last night, she also hadn't known that Jerry was in the habit of leaving the kitchen and taproom in the hands of the crew and disappearing when Matt was elsewhere.
Someone has to have seen something, he said.
Kate lobbed a 5-gallon jug of mayonnaise that was now both heart attack and food poisoning by the tablespoon. It made a satisfying thud as it hit the bottom of the dumpster.
Possibly, she replied, though she had her doubts.
Jerry sighed.
I need to go in and clear more food. Just keep tossing.
Kate couldn't begin to imagine how much money Depot Brewing had lost overnight. She couldn't put the cooler incident down to carelessness either. Not only had the unit's power switch to the right of the door been turned off, but the door had been left open, too. From what she could gather from the brewery gossip, without both of those events, the cooler would have held its temperature within the allowable range until morning. She also knew that the walk-in's door was tough to leave open. Kate had scared the bejesus out of herself Saturday evening when she'd wheeled in a cart with the bins from the salad prep area and the door had shut. On the bright side, her panicked scream had made the cook's nights. So what if her brain had shut down when the door slammed? So what if there was a latch on the inside, too? Everyone had issues, and maybe hers was a touch of claustrophobia, especially when trapped inside a giant stainless steel refrigerator. Her attention was drawn by the clank and rattle of a cart being wheeled across the asphalt. Steve and Amber had arrived with more spoiled food for the dumpster, and Kate knew this was prime sleuthing time. She kept her head down and continued to clear her cart.
So where do you think Matt is?
Amber was asking Steve.
I'm thinking more about what he's going to do when he gets here. Someone is dead meat.
Amber grimaced.
I'm glad I got cut early. I'm off the hook.
Steve nodded.
And the dude trusts me for sure.
So where do you think he is?
Amber asked again.
Steve shrugged. Maybe he has a secret girlfriend, like a married one.
I'm sure that's not the case,
Amber said, turning on her heel and huffing off back to the building.
Another babe under the spell of Matt Culhane, Steve said to Kate. I've been asking Amber out for weeks. She always says she's too busy, but I know if he was asking.
I find it hard to believe he would date an employee, Kate said.
Steve shrugged. You never know in the restaurant business. Late nights, lots of beer and parties. And he's got one or two women hanging around here who are borderline stalkers.
Kate thought it sounded a little like jealousy on Steve's part, but Matt was a pretty hot ticket.
Are you saying Amber might have sabotaged the cooler because she's obsessed with Matt?
Steve looked shocked. No way. She just has a huge crush on the guy. But who doesn't? I mean, every female in a 100-mile radius drools over him.
Matt stepped forward to take a tub of blue cheese from Kate and pitch it into the dumpster.
Talking about me?
Kate hadn't realized he was there. She allowed herself a glance to see if his sex appeal had diminished over the weekend. She decided it definitely hadn't, and looked back to Steve before she turned to stone or salt or whatever a woman did when staring into the face of temptation.
We can handle this, Matt said to Steve. How about you head inside?
He waited a moment and grinned down at Kate.
Interesting look you've got going on. I didn't know you were into tractors.
She had no idea what he was talking about. Tractors?
Your choice of headwear. It makes quite the statement.
Kate absently touched the crown of her head. All she'd been able to find in the way of hair protection when Jerry had ordered her to the brewery had been a fluffy feathered hat of her mom's or a green and yellow John Deere tractor-emblazoned bandana that she'd unearthed in the linen closet. She'd chosen the bandana.
I was short on time, and Jerry sounded borderline hysterical. Desperate times and all that. Speaking of which, you know this wasn't an accident, right?
Yes, I'm just glad it's not the weekend. We've got a fighting chance to pull it together for a Monday crowd. If this had happened on a Saturday, we wouldn't have had time to prep the volume of food we'd need.
He paused.
How'd you survive the weekend?
I have a new boyfriend named Hobart. He and I have become very close.
Matt smiled.
I'm gonna hate to break you two up.
Don't even think about moving me away from Hobart. Everyone's back there at one point or another, and all of them talk. You move me, I miss all of that.
You'll have to tell me what you've heard.
I will, when we can find the time alone.
Let's step into my office when we're done here.
Your office? The one whose walls stop about 6 feet shy of the ceiling? Think not.
Then come to the market with me. I have to pick up food to cover us until the frozen stuff thaws and our replacement shipment arrives this afternoon.
Harborside Market?
Yes. Why?
He hesitated.
Are you worried about the way you look?
No, even though maybe I should be a little. What's worrying me is that anything I know about the locals in this town, I learned from Marcy at the market. Harborside is a place to see and be seen. If I go there with you, people will think...
She rolled her hand, sending him on to what she felt was an obvious conclusion.
That we're shopping?
He asked.
No. They'll think we're more than employer and employee.
His grin widened.
What?
You are a summer person, aren't you? Among the locals, you don't have to do anything to start gossip. It's self-seeding. The second I hired you, it started.
But it's unsubstantiated.
I don't think a trip to the market constitutes a marriage proposal.
We do need to talk, but I want us to be away from town, she said.
How about the public parking lot in Frankfort?
Frankfort was a 15-minute drive south, but worth the effort if it kept their conversation off the record.
What time?
Midnight. Hoot like an owl if you think you may have been followed.
You're making fun of me.
Only a little.
Okay, we'll compromise, she said. How about a 10-minute head start for me, and then we meet at the market?
So we're just bumping into each other.
Totally casual.
5 minutes later, Kate pulled into an open parking space near Harborside Market, which was weirdly named since it stood 7 blocks from the water. After grabbing her keys and hopping from her Jeep, Kate walked past Keene's Wine Bar Bookshop with its pastel, bright, and cheerful Victorian facade. The sporting goods store, with its canoe-shaped sign and manly dark wood exterior, had a placard out front advertising its evening fly-tying class. She skirted around that and moved on. Kate arrived at the quaint market, which still had an original leaded glass panel of intertwined green vines and red roses above its broad plate-glass window. Inside, she saw the usual gathering of locals, some shopping and some just shooting the breeze. The market's automatic door opened as she approached. Even if she hadn't agreed to meet Matt, the scent of freshly baked cookies would have lured her in. And as always, everything in the store was perfectly faced, stacked, and alphabetized. Kate had heard the occasional first-time visitor whisper that it was a little eerie, but she liked it. It gave her comfort to know that someplace in the world, everything was down to molecular level aligned, because in her life, random ruled. She grabbed a basket from the rack at the door and started down the first aisle, just like a normal, non-cloak-and-dagger shopper would. She had no idea what she needed back at the house, but she had to buy something in order to maintain her cover. She reached for the first item that caught her attention and stuck it in her basket.
"It's quirky looking, but it tastes the same as regular cauliflower," a woman's voice announced from behind her.
Kate turned to see Marcy Landon, the market's owner. Marcy had ash blonde hair cut into a sleek bob and had been blessed with classic features that left people guessing her age. Not that she held still long enough for a guess to be made. The woman zipped around so quickly that it seemed she was everywhere at once. "What does?" Kate asked.
"The cauliflower," she repeated as she came to stand beside Kate. "It's purple, but the flavor isn't any different."
"Oh, okay.
Since I started carrying it a few months back, all you summer people have raved over it."
"Great," Kate replied, amused that she was still lumped with the summer people long after summer had gone. She'd heard somewhere, though, that it took 3 generations of full-time residency to be considered a townie, and she was well short of that mark. But speaking of townies, she wondered where Matt was.
"They're all about the same weight," Marcy said.
Kate blinked. "What are?"
"The cauliflowers. You're staring at them. I did worry that there was a certain hypnotic quality to this display. Maybe I should..."
She trailed off and gave an appraising look around the produce aisle.
"But if I move the cauliflower, then I'll have to move the peppers, and after that it's anarchy."
"Oh, no, the display is perfect. I'm just distracted." The market door opened. Instead of Matt, Junior Greinwald, the town's beloved but totally inept handyman, shuffled in. As always, balding, slope-shouldered, and bulky Junior carried a blue 6-pack cooler. He'd been helping Kate patch up her house, fixing broken toilet seals, regrouting leaky showers, and other minor assorted broken things until she could afford to hire a real contractor. She still didn't know what he kept in the cooler. Kate had begun checking out Brussels sprouts still on the stalk when the door swung open again. This time, it was Matt. He grabbed a cart and headed her way. He pulled his cart even to her.
"Funny meeting you here."
"Amazing coincidence."
"So what do you say we shop together?" he asked.
"Sounds like a plan." He closed his hand around her basket's metal handle.
"Here, let me take that for you."
Kate grasped her basket tightly. "No, I can carry it." Matt grinned.
"Are you sure? Letting go can be a hell of a lot of fun. Good for you, even."
"Are we still talking about my basket?" Marcy popped up at Matt's side.
"Well, look at you, Matt. Aren't you the chivalrous one taking Kate's basket?"
Kate let go of the basket, and Matt took an involuntary half-step backward. Marcy gazed speculatively first at Matt and then at Kate.
"So, how long have you two known each other?"
Matt was seemingly oblivious.
"Since I hired Kate last week."
Marcy settled a hand against her heart.
"So, no long ago romance rekindled? That means you felt a spark right away. How sweet."
"There was no spark," Kate said. A bold-faced lie, of course. But her feelings were hers, and she wasn't sharing her spark with the whole town, or even Matt.
"Nonsense," Marcy said. "I have an eye for these things. I could tell immediately with each of Shave and Antwerp's 3 husbands. There's always a spark." "Cheese. I need cheese," Matt said.
Kate figured that was as good a change of topic as any. She whirled around and took off for the deli counter, followed by Matt. Matt stopped dead, halfway to the counter. Junior Greinwald was peeking out at them from behind a soft drink display.
Hey, Junior, Matt said.
Apparently, Junior didn't spy often. He stammered something, grabbed a couple of plastic 2-liter bottles, and bolted. Kate turned to Matt.
You know Junior? He's been working at my place. He seems like an okay guy, but I have to say the way he holds onto that blue cooler like it's made of gold is a little creepy.
Matt resumed walking toward the display case filled with cheese.
He's a good guy. Hangs out at the brewery. The cooler's probably filled with my beer, but nobody really knows for sure. And don't worry about Marcy either. People love to talk in this town.
She shook her head. I don't care about the gossip. What I care about is having my job made tougher.
Tougher how?
Tougher as in nobody's going to talk trash in front of me about you or Depot Brewing if they think we're an item.
I could give you back your basket, he offered. You know, the symbolic handing over of the cauliflower to mark the end of our affair.
Kate tried not to smile. Funny, but I'm being serious here. There's no point in handicapping myself.
True, Matt said. I should have thought about that.
They'd arrived at the deli counter, as had Marcy, Junior, and a couple of women Kate had seen at Bagger's Tavern every now and then. Somehow she doubted they all craved cold cuts. Marcy hustled around the counter and nudged aside the teenage boy working there.
I'll take care of this, she gave Matt a cheery smile. What can I get you?
3 pounds of Swiss and 2 of American, sliced medium, please.
Marcy didn't move.
It's been a while since I've seen you dating anyone, Matt.
Work keeps me busy, he said.
Then it's nice to have found someone right there at work, isn't it?
Matt was unfazed.
About the cheese?
Sammy, 3 Swiss, 2 American medium, she called to her helper without letting her gaze waver from Matt.
Really, I've never seen you look at any woman the way you do at Kate. Kate tried to respond, but had to pause to catch her breath first. Was that true?
I'm not dating Kate, Matt said. I have no plans of dating Kate. She's an employee, and that's all.
That might have been true, and even what Kate wanted, but darned if the words didn't feel harsh. She glanced at her watch and pretended surprise at the time.
Speaking of which, I need to go home and get cleaned up for the dinner shift.
She retrieved her mutant cauliflower and focused on Matt.
I guess I'll see you at work this evening?
No, I have dinner with my family tonight.
Good, she said, and she meant it, too. Kate needed some time to get her this-is-only-work attitude in place. It was that, or give in to the spark she refused to feel. Matt sat looking at the dining table, worn and scarred from decades of family dinners. Lots of happy memories were contained in those scars. And even though he and his sisters were adults with their own lives and dining room tables, there was something comfortable and special about that particular table that drew them all together for the occasional family meal. So here he was, women to the left, women to the right, and his dad at the far end. In just about every way, Matt was a younger mirror of his salt-and-pepper-haired dad. Now they got along great. When Matt had been in his teen years, however, there had been some friction. It hadn't been anything bad, just the usual stuff involved when a kid's testosterone level jumps ahead of his common sense. When he was a kid, his friends had always told him he was lucky to have the cool mom in the neighborhood, and he agreed. He liked that she bowled in the same Thursday bowling league for the past 30 years, walked 3 miles every day, and was an eagle eye of an archer. He did, however, feel that pretty soon they were going to have to stage an intervention when it came to her holiday decorations. Every year, for each holiday, she tried to outdo herself. This year, she'd added an assortment of bunny figurines dressed in Halloween costumes, parading down the center of the dining table like a zombie army. And last year's creepy wrought iron bird figures still glowered at him from the bay windowsill. This house had been in the family since it was built in the late 1800s, back when the Colhanes had money enough to build a 3-story, seriously ornate Victorian. The locals still called it the Colhane Mansion. Matt found the mansion reference to be overkill, just like his mom's decorations. He frowned at the bunny in a tiger costume lurking by his water glass. Matt's mother leaned forward from her seat to his father's right.
Is something wrong, Matt?
Matt opted not to insult the bunnies.
Tough day at work.
The buzz around the table quieted, and Matt knew he'd made a mistake. All his sisters and his mother focused their attention on him. His father pretended to be lost in thought, abandoning Matt to his inquisitors. Matt's sister Maura, 9 months pregnant, gave him a concerned look, implying that he lived in a constant state of chaos. Her 4-year-old, Petra, sensing something interesting was about to happen, stopped coloring and gave Matt the same look.
"What happened now?" Maura asked.
Petra looked up at her mom and then to Matt.
"Yes, what happened now?"
"The walk-in cooler had an issue last night. We lost a lot of food, and I had to scramble to make today work. Did it, though."
Maura looked relieved. "Now that Dad sold the business, you really should have him help out at the brewery. God knows you could use it." Matt smiled. His family might be overprotective, but they all looked out for one another.
"Got it covered. I added staff last week."
Petra put down her crayons. Her face was covered with tomato sauce.
"Is it a girl or a boy? Boys smell sometimes."
Matt's sister Rachel laughed. She was the family's baby and undisputed princess. She was also the only one in the family with curly hair. Matt's mother always said it was her mischievous nature that made her hair curl. She turned to face Matt, her hand resting on her hip.
"That's an excellent question. How does your new employee smell?"
Matt concentrated on chewing his food. Petra looked around the table.
"Boys have a penis and girls have a vagina."
"Come on, Matt," Rachel said. "We all want to know if your new staff member has a vagina."
"Jiminy Cricket, I'm eating pizza. Do we really have to talk about vaginas?"
Rachel put her index finger to her lips and studied Matt.
"You know what I think?"
She paused for effect.
"I'm reading a book about body language right now, and yours is very closed, as if you don't want to talk about vaginas at all."
Matt put his hands flat on the table.
"That's what I just said. I said it 2 seconds ago."
Rachel leaned over to Maura.
"Matt's always been very excitable when it comes to vaginas."
Everybody at the table nodded.
"Anyone I know?"
Lizzie, his second youngest sister, asked. She was his best friend as a kid, and the tomboy who'd always kept up with him. Her brown hair was still cut short, and her years of playing sports with Matt and his friends had given her an athletic body that looked great in her Keene's Harbor police uniform. Matt's friends hadn't shown a lot of romantic interest in her back then, but they sure did now. Matt grabbed a slice of pepperoni from the pan.
"I don't think so. She's new to town. Her name's Kate Appleton."
"Is she Larry and Barb's youngest?" his mother asked.
Matt looked up, intrigued that his mother might know Kate's parents.
"I don't know."
"Short, cute, long and curly blonde hair?" his mother asked.
In Matt's estimation, Kate had also gone from cute to sexy. Not that his mom needed to know that.
"Short, with short blonde hair."
"I'll bet that's Kate, all grown up, and you'd know Larry if you saw him," his mother said. "He always used to have his Saturday morning coffee with a group in the hardware store."
Maura smiled at her brother.
"Matt didn't like working Saturday mornings. It cramped his Friday night style."
"Well, back when we'd spend our Friday nights together at Bagger's Tavern, I remember Barb being quite the social butterfly. Great singing voice, too," his mother said.
"As I recall, Larry was a bigwig in the auto industry," his dad added.
"Advertising," his mom corrected.
"Cars,"
Dad said. His mother patted his father's hand where it rested on the table. "No matter. They were good people, though they haven't been around much in recent years. They own that big old house. The Nutshell sits right at the end of Loon Road on the cusp of the lake and has a great view of the bird sanctuary across the way."
Matt stopped eating.
"That's Larry and Barb's house?"
He knew the house well. He owned the mortgage. The owner was 3 months behind on the loan, and his lawyer had already begun the foreclosure process. He was the jerk evicting Kate Appleton from her bed and breakfast. Matt wanted to ask for more details, but he knew that would tip off his family to the fact that Kate had caught his attention, and in a big way, too. Matt looked toward the front windows where the iron crow ornaments were silhouetted in the setting sun. He pushed away from the table and went to get one.
Mind if I take this?
He asked his mother. Of course not. Are you actually going to start decorating your house? I could come over with the spare decorations up in the attic and...
Thanks, but all I want is the bird, he said before she could offer up anything else.
Matt returned to his seat, moved the bunny away from his water glass, and put the crow in its place. The ornament was really kind of creepy, with feet too big to ever work and corroded spots that gave it a diseased look. No matter. Kate was either going to understand the spirit of his peace offering or think he was nuts. Chapter 4. Night had fallen. Kate sat on the overstuffed floral chintz sofa in the Nutshell's circa 1976 living room. She'd left the room's beach-facing windows open enough that a crisp breeze pushed through them. As a teen, when she'd been feeling a little blue, this couch had been her landing spot. While Kate wasn't blue, exactly, she did feel the need to decompress. Between the cooler incident, the market non-meeting, and a wild dinner shift that had followed, she was tapped out. A half-eaten bag of chocolate chips and an equally depleted bottle of white wine, along with its glass, sat on the oak coffee table in front of her. She'd had a decompression fest. To make matters worse, there was something wrong with her living room floor. The floorboards on the western side of her house next to the master bedroom had buckled, bowing upward. She had noticed it a week ago and moved a heavy armoire to the affected area in order to flatten the wood, but it had only gotten worse, much worse. Kate suddenly felt a twinge of late-night loneliness. She picked up the telephone and dialed her friend Ella Wade. Ella answered on the third ring. "Chocolate chips and Chenin Blanc for dinner aren't necessarily signs of a pity party, are they?" Kate asked.
"I think that depends on the hour and the quantity consumed," Ella said.
Kate rested the phone between her ear and her shoulder while she corralled a few more chips. "Started early, and lots of both. I'm sorry to say, then, that your meal has all the earmarks of a pity party." Kate smiled at Ella's answer. They had become friends as teenagers, sneaking Strawberry Breeze wine coolers behind the then-abandoned train station. Ella had always been the brainy one of the pack. Kate had gone on to a middling college and lots of parties. Ella had cruised through Harvard and then moved on to Stanford for law school with every intention of becoming a professor. She changed course a couple of years ago and joined her family's law practice in town. Ella's family had been lawyering in Keene's Harbor since the late 1800s. Kate dug around in the bottom of the bag for a chip. "I'm going to continue to think of my meal as decadent pampering." "A handful of chips is pampering. A bag is pity scarfing. I heard that plastic crinkling. What's going on?"
"I'm never going to get this house fixed."
"What do you know about warped floorboards?"
"Sounds like you've got a water leak. The water gets trapped under the wood, causing it to expand, and it buckles to relieve the pressure."
Kate sucked in her breath. "Great, a water leak. I'll call a plumber tomorrow and see if he can find the problem."
"So," Ella said, "not to change the subject, but I had lunch at Bagger's yesterday. How'd you get Matt Culhane to give you a job?"
Kate refilled her wine glass. "Equal parts desperation and determination, and the end result seems to be a whole lot of suffering on my part."
"I don't see how a person could suffer too much with Culhane to look at," Ella said.
"The suffering comes from running Hobart the dishwasher from hell. As for my boss, I'll admit he's a stellar decorative item when he's around. But really, after Richard, I'm not looking at men as anything more than decorative. There are good substitutes for any of their other uses."
"Ouch, that's a little bitter."
And a lot easier to say to Ella than it would have been to Matt when he was handling her cauliflower. But Kate was determined to keep her head on straight. "I'm going to continue to think of it as a practical attitude," she said. "As a species, men are great, some of my favorite people. But I need to sort out a whole lot of stuff before I date, let alone do anything else ever again."
"Okay, I can agree with that. I've taken the celibacy pledge until I can bring in enough work to support the salary Dad insists on giving me. Not that there's anyone around here to date, in any case. Except Matt Culhane," Ella added in a teasing voice.
"So anyway, how's work?" Kate asked.
"Pretty much how you'd expect it to be when working with a father, a brother, and two cousins.
Wonderful, except when it's not. And then, at least we all still love each other. The other day, Kate was distracted by the crunch of tires on the gravel drive out front of the cottage. She set aside her wine glass and stood. "Hang on," she said to Ella. "I think someone's here."
"Out there? You're kidding."
The drive to the nutshell was a good, winding stretch off the road just inland from the shore. People didn't end up at her door by accident.
"Wish I were," Kate said.
A ratty black T-shirt emblazoned with the words "sex and beer" in fat white block print and plaid flannel sleep pants so worn they were frayed over her knees weren't exactly meet-the-visitor wear. Then again, who could possibly be visiting her? Her wine buzz was swept away on a sea of adrenaline.
"Don't hang up," she whispered to Ella.
"Why would I? And why are you whispering?" Kate nudged aside the lighthouse-themed curtain that covered the front door's window and peeked outside. A pair of truck-height headlights shone directly into her eyes. She let the curtain drop and turned the door's deadbolt. Her visitor's vehicle had come to a stop.
"Don't know," Kate said to Ella. "I'm just a little edgy. You're the only one who'd be out here, and you're there."
"Okay, you have a point," Ella said. "Should I dial the police on my cell? A lot of good that will do when I'm way out here." The truck's headlights were off. Kate scurried to the kitchen and grabbed the biggest knife she could find in the knife block. "Single girl, lake house, mysterious midnight intruder. This is so straight out of Friday the 13th, she told Ella. Kate glanced at the serrated bread knife in her hand. Great, she'd have to saw the prowler to death. A knock sounded at the front door. Kate considered this a good sign. So far as she knew, homicidal maniacs didn't knock. Then again, she had limited experience with homicidal maniacs.
"Geez, this is like one of those horror movies," Ella said.
"Don't go to the front door. That's the equivalent of the stupid babysitter who goes down into the basement. Just hide." Kate approached the door.
"My car is out front, Ella. The lights are on in my house. Clearly, I'm here."
Funny how calm she sounded when her heart was slamming its way out of her chest. Another knock. "Do you have the knife?" Ella asked.
"Yes."
Kate ducked below the door's window. She had no intention of losing the element of surprise. Slowly, carefully, Kate moved the curtain. Inch by inch, Matt Culhane's face appeared, lit to glowing perfection under the porch light.
"Oh, no."
Kate let the curtain drop.
"Who is it?" Ella asked.
"Freddy Krueger? Your ex, Richard?"
"No, worse. It's Culhane."
"You're kidding." Kate rolled her eyes. "Nope, he's here in all his glory."
"Really? All his glory? Nice."
Matt knocked again and called her name.
"I have to go,"
Kate whispered into the phone and disconnected over Ella's pleas to stay on the line and eavesdrop. Then, holding the phone and knife in one hand, Kate released the deadbolt and opened the door just enough to peek out. Big, strong guy, eyes full of ambition, and a smile that was full of humor at himself and the world. The kind of humor that only comes with a healthy dose of self-confidence. Yep, it was Culhane, all right.
"Hey,"
Matt said. Kate tried to process how best to get rid of the knife, which now seemed a little excessive.
"Gosh, this is a surprise. How'd you find my house?"
"Well, that's an interesting story."
That got Kate curious.
"I don't suppose you'd consider letting me inside?" he asked.
Good grief, she thought. She was a wreck. Almost empty wine bottle, ratty clothes, hair from hell, and she had a bread knife in her hand.
"I thought we were going to talk tomorrow," she said to him.
His smile was crooked and endearing.
"I decided I liked tonight better, and I come bearing gifts."
He reached into his pocket and pulled out a weirdly shaped object. Kate squinted down at the thing, uncertain what it was.
"Is it chocolate?" she asked.
"Sorry, no chocolate. It's metal."
"Metal what?"
"A metal crow."
Kate reached to accept the gift, inadvertently brushing her hand against Matt's. A little tingle of heat rushed through her, leaving a breathless lump in her throat. The knife in her other hand dropped to the floor, interrupting the moment. Come in. I was having a glass of wine. Can I get you anything?
He stepped inside. His gaze shifted from her to the knife at his feet, then back to her. He took his coat off and casually hung it on the rack.
No thanks. Matt followed Kate into the living room. So why aren't you drinking beer? He asked.
Kate hastily cleared the coffee table of the remnants of her not-a-pity party.
I've never been much of a beer drinker. To be honest, I hate the stuff. Have a seat.
Matt settled on one end of the sofa, and Kate took a spot on the opposite end, leaving a fabric field of poppies and chrysanthemums between them. She was glad for the space, because he looked good.
Really good. Let me get this straight, Matt said. I hired someone who hates beer to work in a microbrewery?
It looks that way.
I think I need a more detailed application form.
He pointed at her shirt.
Should I assume you hate both the things listed there?
She glanced down at her sex and beer t-shirt, then back at Colhane, who gave her a grin.
Neither of them are at the top of my priorities these days, but this is a song title and the shirt's from Milwaukee 2006 Summerfest.
You sound pretty certain about that no sex or beer thing. I think I'm going to have to take you up on the challenge.
Her heart stumbled.
You're talking about the beer, right?
Of course I am. I have my priorities, too.
Yeah, and not for a minute did Kate believe it was beer. Okay. Truth was, she hoped it wasn't beer.
So what is it we really had to talk about? She asked.
First, you were right and I was wrong.
Kate laughed.
That's always a good start.
He pointed to the ornament.
And this comes with the admission. I'm not much for eating crow, so I thought I'd give you one.
She examined the weird little metal bird.
Thank you, but it looks more like a raven to me.
My family vote came out in favor of a raven disguised as a crow.
She couldn't have heard that right.
Your family voted?
Matt shrugged.
Long story. It begins with my birth. Let's just skip it and move on to me saying I was nuts to have thought we could talk at Harborside Market.
It's okay, she said. I think everyone in town is now pretty clear on the fact that you're not attracted to me.
I'm not that good an actor, he said. No one believes it.
Kate bit into her lower lip. Matt studied her for a beat.
I just admitted I'm attracted to you, and I can't read your reaction.
Flustered, Kate whispered.
He blew out a sigh.
I get that a lot. Why don't you give me a quick rundown of what you learned this weekend?
Well, first, I learned that Jerry doesn't seem too devoted to the concept of management once you leave town. He shows up for a little while, tells the staff to follow the usual program, and call his cell should something break, burn, or blow up. Then he leaves.
Matt raised his eyebrows ever so slightly, but he said nothing, so Kate plowed on. She might as well get all the bad stuff out of the way. He'd wanted an unfiltered report, and she would deliver it.
Well, Steve thinks you've got some secret affair with a married woman, but I think he was just saying that to enhance his own romantic life.
I don't think I want to know how that could possibly enhance his romantic life. And, for the record, married women always have been and always will be off-limits.
I haven't known you long, but you seem like a stand-up guy to me, she said.
Still, time would tell.
One life skill Kate had been working to develop was a keener eye for dishonesty. She'd missed the early warning signs with Richard, but eventually she'd caught on. Now she was at least marginally older and wiser, both of which rocked. And while she still planned to open her heart and trust, she'd do it with some initial caution. She wasn't up for another loss of love or poodle.
Is there anyone else I should know about?
Matt asked.
Kate shook her head. It sounds like you're golden with the rest of the staff. I didn't hear anything except a passing mention from Layla that her son couldn't get a job with you.
He'd have to apply for a job first, which he won't, because he likes his winters off from his marina job.
I got the feeling Layla believes he has applied.
Well, employee applications are confidential, so I won't be clearing that up, he said. That's it, then?
Yep. Matt nodded.
Any thoughts on who might have sabotaged the walk-in fridge?
That's tough. It could have been anyone. Layla and Steve were in and out. The cooks were there, and so were the bartender, the busser, and the barback. It could have been Jerry until he went on walkabout, or whatever it is he does. No one saw it happen, and all of them had access. Add to that, it probably happened after hours, which means the back door was open while the trash was being hauled out. The walk-in is on a straight path from that door. It's highly unlikely that the crew would have missed someone slipping in, but it's possible.
True, but I'd rather believe the nearly impossible than think my own employees would mess with me.
I understand. But until someone is caught pulling one of these stunts, everyone's on the list. And I know this is technically none of my business, but maybe if you shared a little info with your staff when you take off, they wouldn't pass their free time coming up with the top 10 bizarre reasons Matt Culhane is missing.
You're probably right, he said. But I shouldn't have to tell everyone my every last move. For all the time I'm there, I deserve some privacy when I'm not.
It was just a suggestion.
I know, but I'm used to running my show my way.
Sorry, I'm hardwired to just put it all out there.
So I've noticed, he said. I think it might be one of your better qualities.
They smiled at each other, and she found herself considering how it would feel to close the distance between them on that flowery sofa and kiss him. It would feel good, she thought. Really good. It was like a dreadful out-of-body experience as she witnessed herself begin to lean toward him, like a teenager crushing on a new boy. The lean was immediately followed by panic, and Kate shot to her feet and set the metal bird on the coffee table.
It's getting late. I'm sure you're really tired.
Matt rose and reached out to touch her hair.
I could never be that tired.
Holy Moses, Kate thought, the panic mingling with flat-out lust.
Before this goes any further, he said, I have something I need to tell you. I'm the guy who owns your mortgage.
For a moment, Kate thought she'd misheard. What?
I didn't know it was your house before tonight, I swear. I'm really sorry, but I have a lot of money already invested in this, too, and I made a fair deal with you and your parents.
You think it's fair to take my home?
Kate, it's falling apart and nobody would pay what I'm offering.
Kate felt her blood pressure hit the stroke zone. It doesn't matter what somebody would pay because it's not for sale. I'm going to get the money to fix the place somehow, and I'm going to turn this place into a home and a business. Matt shuffled his feet and looked into Kate's eyes.
Look, I'll give you until Thanksgiving to get caught up on your mortgage. Just ignore the foreclosure papers.
Kate's eyes were as wide as saucers. Foreclosure papers? You're serving me with foreclosure papers?
Not anymore, at least not right now.
Kate turned Matt around and hustled him to the door. I don't have much of a choice. I'll take the deal, and I'll see you at work tomorrow. The sooner I find your saboteur, the sooner I get my bonus, and the sooner I can pay you. Good night. Kate listened to the crunch of gravel as Matt's car drove off. She hated him for taking her house, but she had to admit he'd been honest with her, and even generous giving her until Thanksgiving. She leaned her forehead against the door and gave up a sigh. The worst part of the whole hideous mess was that she had very friendly feelings for him, feelings that might be misinterpreted now. She worried that he might have a hard time sorting out her genuine attraction from a cheesy attempt to bail on a mortgage payment. Chapter 5. Matt and his three-legged dog, Chuck, had hunkered down to watch the flames dance in the large fieldstone fireplace that anchored the great room in Matt's log home. Chuck gave his standard contribution to any conversation, a thump of his tail against a pine floor scarred from his constant quest to discover if the darker knots in the wood might actually be hidden dog treats. Matt stretched his arms across the back of the brown leather sofa. He took in the family photos that sat on the fireplace's rough-hewn oak mantle. Chuck starred in more than one of the shots. 5 years ago, Matt had found Chuck tied to a newspaper box outside a gas station. Apparently, someone had stuck him there the prior night, and no one had laid claim to him during the course of the day. Matt liked to think of himself as a practical guy. He'd known that a three-legged hound, no matter how much he otherwise appeared to be bred to hunt, was going to be ornamental at best. But one look at that dog's chocolate-brown eyes and hopeful expression, and there had been no way he could have left him behind.
That was my lucky day, Matt said to Chuck.
Chuck was a good listener when Matt needed to unload, and Chuck could be counted on for unconditional love any time of the day or night.
"I don't know why I'm letting Kate get to me," Matt said.
Chuck tilted his head, probably trying to pick out words he knew, like food and treat.
"But that's not what's messing me up. There's something more about her. Look at the way she took on Hobart like it was her life goal. And the way she's straight with me, too. No sugarcoating. I like her. A lot, if you know what I mean."
Chuck started to snore as he fell into a doze. He had been neutered a long time ago and had absolutely no idea what Matt meant. Matt's thoughts turned from Kate to his business problems. As the old saying went, it wasn't paranoia if someone really was out to get you. The flat tires and messed up deliveries he dealt with, but the open walk-in had cost him some serious money. He had been trying not to take it personally, since whoever was doing this had a certain level of insanity going on, but this was personal. Matt headed into the kitchen. He opened the fridge and pulled out the orange juice jug, only to discover that at some point or another he'd stuck it back in there empty. At least that way it matched the rest of his fridge's barren expanse. He left the empty jug on the counter and swore he'd remember to get food tomorrow, or eat at that restaurant again. The phone rang, and caller ID told him it was Lizzie. Guess she wasn't through with him for the evening. He could ignore her, but it would do him no good. As a Keene's Harbor police officer, she'd been known to pull him over when he ducked the rest of the family for too long. He picked up the phone.
"Hi, Lizzie."
"You blew out of the house so fast, I didn't get the chance to give you your ticket for Friday night," Lizzie said. Ticket. Matt didn't like that word in any Keene's Harbor context, be it parking or speeding or, far worst of all, admission. And even though this was Lizzie on the phone, he was damn certain that she was referring to the dreaded admission ticket to whatever Friday night benefit was planned at the Brotherhood of Woodsman's Hall. "There's a fundraiser for Lester Pankram," she said. Matt winced. Lester was a nice old guy, but thrift had gotten the better of him. He'd been driving his tractor along the shoulder of a road when he'd seen a beer can. Hot for the 10-cent refund, he'd stuck his tractor in neutral and hopped down. Blind to anything but that shiny can, he'd failed to note the road's downhill slope and had pretty much run himself over. He'd come out of the incident with a broken leg, the sure knowledge that he'd become a town legend, and a Friday fundraiser that would be held to help cover his medical expenses.
"I'm working Thursday and Friday this week," Matt said. "There's a private party at the brewery on Thursday, and we're always slammed on Friday night."
He rolled away from the nearly weekly fundraisers the way Lester should have from his tractor. For some reason, at these events, the older folks in town found it amusing to reminisce about the many dumb-assed moves Matt had made as a kid. The talk came with multiple elbows in the ribs, wry winks, and laughing. A lot of the stuff was funny when he heard it the first time of the night, but by the fifth or so time around, he found himself remembering why he'd decided to build his home deep in the woods, and why he liked to send an anonymous envelope of cash to the fundraiser's beneficiary. "Let your staff do what you pay them for and come to the fundraiser," Lizzie said. "You can meet and greet there, too."
"Thanks, but I'll pass."
"How about you don't this time? You skip 99% of these things. It makes you look like a hermit." He smiled at the gap in her logic.
"Only if you can find me to see me."
"I'm not joking, Matt. This is a town tradition, and we Culhanes have been part of the town forever. Dad wants you there with the rest of the family, even if he's too proud to say it." That was the thing about Lizzie. She'd always known just how to get to a soft spot. She had none of the noise of his other sisters and 10 times the efficiency. Matt didn't want to disappoint his dad. He loved the man, even if he had never been able to pull off working side by side with him.
"I'll stop by," he said, "but no way I'm staying the whole night."
"That's up to you. All I did was commit to getting you there." Matt sighed. No doubt another of his siblings had the duty of making him stay. He wandered out of the kitchen and back to a spot in front of the fireplace where Chuck slumbered on.
"Anything else?" he asked his sister.
"It would be nice if Depot Brewing dropped off a keg for the event, don't you think?"
"I wouldn't have it any other way." At least then he could be sipping some of his favorite Scottish ale while being retold the tales of his youth.
Great. And Matt, pick up Mom and Dad on the way to the hall, okay?
His mom and dad were fully capable of driving to the hall, not to mention circumnavigating the globe. What? You don't trust me to show up?
Lizzie laughed. I just know you.
Fine, I'll pick them up. But so long as we're horse trading, do you want to do me a favor?
What?
When you're on night patrol, take an extra loop by depot, could you?
Do you want to tell me why?
It's nothing big, just enough small stuff going down that I'd like a little extra attention.
Define small stuff, she said in a voice that was now 100% business.
One set of flat tires on delivery trucks and an open freezer door. The first definitely took place after hours, and the second, maybe. Either way, an extra drive-by or two would help.
Okay, I'll make sure we swing by more often. There's not as much to patrol this time of year anyway. And I'll see you on Friday, right?
Wouldn't miss it,
Matt said.
He disconnected and looked down at Chuck. Dude, I'd trade places with you in a heartbeat.
Chuck briefly opened one droopy hound eye as though to say, no way, then cruised back to Napland. The canine king would not be deposed.
In bed but not sleepy, Kate reached for the phone to pick up her conversation with Ella. I just wanted to let you know I was alive, she said when her friend answered.
When you didn't call back right away, I figured maybe you were putting Matt Culhane to one of the better uses God intended.
It was briefly tempting, but no.
Do tell.
I'd rather not, Kate said. It wasn't one of my better moments. How about if we take a look at my big social picture instead? I remain in social limbo. I need to start getting out and meeting more people.
That I can help you fix. This Friday there's a fundraiser at the Woodsman's Hall. Why don't you come along with me? It's nothing all that thrilling. There's beer, potluck, and gossip, but it'll give you a chance to meet a few more people.
Kate smiled. I think you've just given me incentive to survive the rest of the week at work.
Including Thursday's private Halloween-themed party being thrown by Shay Van Antwerp. Jerry had told Kate she'd be doing a lot of detailed prep work for the gathering. Kate didn't know what that meant, but she expected it wasn't good.
Don't get your hopes up too high about this fundraiser, Ella said, then yawned.
Too late. Kate was primed.
Wednesday had been little more than a blur of frenzied work as the depot crew prepared for Shay Van Antwerp's annual extravaganza. It was now Thursday evening, and Kate was exhausted. She stretched the cramped fingers of her left hand and looked at the jack-o'-lanterns leering at her from tables set up in Depot Brewing's loading dock area. Wednesday morning, she'd viewed Jerry's assignment of creating 50 pumpkin carvings as a gift. This was her fun, artsy reward for having become BFFs with Hobart. For the first dozen works of art, she'd been all about the details, shaving away paper-thin bits of rind for perfect, translucent accents. Frankenstein and Dracula came to life, along with a tribute to Stella, her poodle. As she'd worked, Kate had enthusiastically separated pumpkin seeds from guts, thinking that salty roasted treats at each of the party tables would be an ideal accent to Culhane's fabulous brew. But by the afternoon, her gag reflex had kicked in, and washing slimy mutant gourd seeds had fallen off her list of volunteer activities. She had left work and taken a series of long hot showers, both before bed and after she'd woken this morning. No luck. She still smelled like a giant pumpkin. By 5:30 p.m., Kate no longer cared how she smelled, and her artistic impulses had begun to sputter. No more tiny tools for her, just a nasty, sharp fillet knife.
Almost done? Layla asked as she entered the storeroom. Just three more to go. No time. You're going to have to put them aside and help set up. The early comers are starting to trickle in.
Kate looked at her watch, which she'd set on one of the table's edges to avoid most of the pumpkin carnage.
But the party isn't supposed to start for another half hour. Free beer tends to make for overly prompt guests. I hadn't thought of that. All the same, I'd really like a shot at finishing. I swear, with my new minimalist approach, I'll be done with the last three in a flash.
Okay, then. I'll gather up some help to have the finished ones taken out, and you keep carving. Everything needs to be done before Shay arrives. The good news for us is that she always arrives late, Layla said, filling a cart with grinning heads and leaving Kate alone in her pumpkin kingdom. Figuring the time had come to kick the assembly line into high gear, Kate grabbed the big butcher knife she'd borrowed from the kitchen and stabbed it into the top of the first of the three intact pumpkins. It sank in quickly and deeply. The act was weirdly satisfying. She seemed to be developing a very real disrespect for pumpkins.
You look like a natural.
Kate glanced up to see Matt watching her from the doorway. She pulled on the knife, but it had gone in too deeply and wasn't coming out. She tried to rock it back and forth. No luck.
I'm not sure that's a good thing.
He approached her.
Problems?
If one counted among them a heady overappreciation of a man dressed in something as simple as a black polo shirt and jeans, she had exactly two at the moment.
The knife is stuck.
Let me see if I can help.
Matt came around to her side of the table. Wow, but he smelled good. She caught a hint of woods and green fields, and unlike her, he didn't have a bit of pumpkin slime on him. Kate moved her hand away from the knife, but not quickly enough. They touched, and she swore she felt an electric tingle as her hand involuntarily began to close around his. The sensation was far more satisfying than stabbing into a pumpkin. Good news on the mental stability front. Matt wrapped his hand around the knife's handle and winced.
Sorry, she said. I guess everything's a little messy at this point.
With his free hand, he brushed a fleck of pumpkin from her cheek.
So it is, he said, but it still looks good.
He turned his attention back to the pumpkin and pulled the knife free with an ease she envied.
Tell you what, he said. Why don't you get a bunch of these outside to line the front walk, and I'll finish up the last three.